This is Mark Lane.
This is Robert Groden.
This is Dick Russell.
This is Jim Mars.
This is Lisa Pease.
This is Dr. David Mantic.
This is Cyril Weck.
This is Jim DiEugenio.
This is Joan Mellon.
This is David Lifton.
This is Jerry Polycott.
This is Gary Shaw.
This is Bill Kelly.
This is Greg Burnham.
This is Gerald McKnight.
This is Sherry Feaster.
This is Joseph McBride.
This is Dave Ratcliffe.
This is David Talbot.
This is Doug Horn.
This is Walt Brown.
This is John Barber.
This is Bill Pepper.
This is Richard Belzer.
This is Oliver Stone.
This is Governor Jesse Ventura, and you're listening to Black Op Radio.
Studio computers online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T-minus 30 seconds.
Server connection confirmed.
T-minus 25 seconds.
Live stream for 220K.
T-minus 20 seconds. T-minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T-minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leno Sanic.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. This is your host, Leno Sanic. Tonight, we are speaking to Paul Schrade, researcher, political researcher, and much more, but for those following the RFK case, they're familiar with you. So welcome, Paul. Hello.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. We came across this reopening the RFK investigation, Paul Schrade and Congressman Allard Lowenstein from 1973. And this is a very old interview, but as I was reading through it, we've had it transcribed. Just very interesting. It just goes to show how many tidbits of information were known in the early days of the assassination that I think a lot of researchers have forgotten about or didn't know about. And so just to start off, can you give us the very brief background to yourself and the RFK shooting?
Well, I was an officer, United Auto Workers Union, and ran into my the president of my union, my mentor, who didn't want me be in the Robert Kennedy campaign because of sticking with Johnson. But I insisted because Walter Reuther, who I loved and respected, refused to break with Johnson over the war. And so I decided to join the Robert Kennedy campaign because I'd worked with him in the convention when John Kennedy got nominated and elected. And so I had this long-term relationship. So I became labor chair of his campaign and began helping put the campaign together in California for Robert Kennedy for the California presidential primaries, where he's running against Jean McCarthy and also a stand-in for Hubert Humphrey. So there's three campaigns going on. And our campaign was successful, but that night, after Bob's victory speech in the primary, in this primary in California, is on his way to the convention after that, although he didn't have all that support he needed, but he's probably going to get it. Anyway, we broke from the Ambassador Hotel ballroom where Bob had made a speech, and I went quickly into the pantry area, and he went off the back of the stage. I went off the front and made a different turn. And I met him. He came into the pantry area of the Ambassador Hotel kitchen and said, you know, I want you and Jess with me at the media conference. He was heading for a media conference because the people who had New York deadlines hadn't had any real opportunity because he was campaigning out on the streets all the time. And so the print media didn't have that much access. Well, anyway, We turned, and he shook hands with a couple of kitchen workers. I remember seeing them and understanding something, why they wanted to meet him and shake his hand. Well, he broke away from that and walked eastward and towards the Colonial Room, and I began following him, although even though I was very close to him at one point, I was about 6 feet behind him. Well, Sirhan stepped in at that point in front of Kennedy and fired two shots. His gun was, according to the prosecution, was 2 to 3 feet in front of Kennedy. He missed Bob Kennedy, and I got hit with the second of two bullets that Sirhan fired at that point. How much more do you want of this?
No, that's fine. That's fine. Just you were in the pantry. You got shot. Evidently, they said that one of the shots had gone through Bob Kennedy's shoulder, padding of his jacket there, and hit you or somehow, but whatever.
No. None of Sirhan's shots went into Kennedy at all.
No, I know. I'm just saying if you follow the
that weapon. Shot, those two shots, one hit me and one went wild and probably wound up in the door frame behind us.
Yeah. All right, so let's get to your collaboration with Lowenstein, and this is an interview from 1973. And first of all, do you recall that with Jim Berland?
No, I do. Well, I have for a long time because Al is the one that recruited me to get involved in a new investigation of the case. I couldn't really deal with it. I was emotionally grounded pretty much and lost my job as an officer of the United Auto Workers Union, went back to work in the factory, and I just accepted the fact that Sirhan did it and didn't do anything about it. And I did maintain my work in the anti-war movement, but I thought 1974, in fact, this is new to me with that article that was 1973. I always thought it was 1974, but now I know it's 73. He came to our house here in Los Angeles. I live above the Sunset Strip, and said there are certain questions. He had talked to Robert Vaughn and a couple of investigators on the case and said there's some questions that haven't been answered, and he wanted to dig into it. So what we did do, he said, there's a person down the street from your house, four or five blocks away, Lillian Castellano and her friend Floyd Nelson. They've got some information that we ought to take a look at. So we went down just five blocks from us, and this little old lady was there, and Mary Sirhan's mother was there, and Floyd Nelson, and they began talking about the fact that there were a couple of they had a photograph of a couple of bullets in the doorframe, which went beyond the number of bullets reported by the police. And so that was my first entry into the case, and we began talking to lawyers, and we decided first to do the genteel thing and talk to the chief of police at the time, Ed Davis, and so Allard and I met with him and raised certain questions. And he said, well, put it in writing and I'll get back to you. Well, we did that, but what happened was Allard kept getting phone calls saying, well, we sent us another copy of the questions, we don't have them, we can't locate them. Well, we found out in 1988 when files were opened up because they were closed down officially, right from the beginning. We found a letter in their internal memo in the LAPD, the police department, that said, do not answer these questions of Howard Lowenstein because they would contradict statements we've been made publicly. So that's the reason we didn't hear from them. And so we didn't know this till 88. So Allard and I, we did meetings, we did press conference in L.A., press conference in New York, trying to raise this issue. trying to get the media involved in it.
Now, can I just back you up for 1 second there? Congressman Lowenstein, Allard Lowenstein, what did you know about him before this RFK assassination? Was he on your radar? Was he respected?
He was a good Democrat from New York. He was on the Nixon enemies list. And it was
okay, that says a lot right there.
and that's a good recommendation. And he was also involved in the anti-war movement and was a real favorite of a lot of students. He could get big crowds on campuses and deal with questions like the Vietnam War and get really great support that way. So that's how I knew him. He had a good reputation, and I trusted him.
Okay, good. So he was a rare congressman that people looked up to, or like you said, you trusted him. So that's pretty rare, I think, for a politician.
Yeah. And I think the next important step we made, I filed a lawsuit with his help and the help of Mel Levine, who was a lawyer at that time, became a member of the state assembly, became a member of the Congress. He's now with Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, big law firm. He and a couple of other people, lawyers we work with, I filed a lawsuit asking for the files, asking for any evidence, and filed a lawsuit against Sirhan and 50 others and who might be involved. So just a broad-ranging thing. But we never got any real action out of the court, except we did get several pictures, and they said, this is all we can give you, which gave us some sort of clue on extra bullets. But that didn't work. But I filed another lawsuit asking for a refiring of the Sirhan gun to see if they could, how they matched up with bullets from victims, from Robert Kennedy and five others of us who got shot by Sirhan. We were not sure that Sirhan at that point had shot Robert Kennedy. We didn't have the evidence at the point. But what happened is Judge Wenke in his court agreed to a refiring of the Sirhan gun. Seven experts in forensics and firearms were selected by each of the parties. I selected one, the DA selected one, Sirhan selected one, and so forth. So the parties involved, and CBS also got involved and selected one, because CBS, at the same time I filed a lawsuit, and I'm not sure of the date, but within the same period of time, they filed the same lawsuit I did. And so we had these two lawsuits and this panel of seven experts, and we found out a lot of information from that panel.
Now, was the lawsuit against the police department, the Los Angeles County, or, I mean, who are you challenging, the court?
We're asking the court to refire the gun and have these seven experts that were finally approved by the court to do the examination. So those seven examiners went to work pretty fast in dealing with the evidence that was available.
Right. And to records released, as you said, years later, they found out that more evidence dug up would have been contrary to their official position.
Well, no, the report was made after a few months. The panel came back with a report that could not find evidence of the second gun. Now, these many important reporters were there, and they just fled the courtroom and reported that, no second gun. Well, the panel didn't say that. It said there's no evidence of the second gun, but there could have been a second gun based upon the evidence. So it was so we were locked into a really bad journalistic adventure at that point, where we were being poo-pooed for even doing this and saying, oh, there's no second gun. Now, since that period of time, and it took years to get the files, the LAPD DA files, out of the hands of the establishment, because the LAPD and DA close it down. The irony of all that is that right after the trial in April of 69, after the Sirhan trial where he's convicted and sent to the San Quentin gas chamber, we found out that, first of all, the district attorney at the time, Evel Younger, right after the trial, said there's going to be a full disclosure of all of the evidence. There are tens of evidence over there in the LAPD that the public should have. We don't want another Dallas mystery. Well, what we found out is those files got locked up. Now, the reason for that was to go back to Lillian Castellano, the little old lady down the street. By the way, I met Mary Sirhan, Sirhan's mother, that night when we first went there in 73. And what we found out is that when she went public right after the trial with information there might be two extra bullets more than Sirhan could have fired in the door frame, they locked up the files, period. And so she was onto something, and we didn't know that. And we didn't know why they locked up the files after making this full pledge that there's going to be full disclosure. Well, 1969, within a week or two of the trial ending, and even before Sirhan's appeals were finished, they had totally locked up the files. So we went from full disclosure to full closure. And it took a long struggle to get those files out of the hands of the police department and the district attorney. And we finally did that by having a major effort by some of us lawyers and so forth, with the help of, at the time, Los Angeles Mayor Tom Bradley. And so those files were finally released in 88, after that struggle in 86, 87. And we were able to find out a lot of information. But we also found out major destruction. The Secretary of State, who took over the records, they finally wound up the California State Archives in Sacramento. She came out with a list, and the head of the group that had the files came out with a large list of things that had been destroyed right from the beginning. So the fix was in, and we didn't really know this until 1988, 89, 90, when we began checking the files.
This is interesting because, you know, we followed the trial of Scott Enyart and other people who have had documents held back, photographs held back, or then claimed to be destroyed. Yeah. And I think the multiple bullets is because of different rifling or just a non-effort to identify these bullets from the same gun. In fact, they were very ambiguous about it.
Well, we now know, and one of the things I'm doing at this point is going over the evidence of the prosecution, the DA and the district attorney and their successors, the early ones and their successors. And what I've been able to find out, there's a very good case just based on the prosecution's own evidence that Sirhan could not and did not shoot Robert Kennedy. And that's why I went to his last parole board hearing to announce that to him, and also publicly, that we had this evidence. So that's been my job lately. Now, with Allard, well, if you have the time to do this, but there's a very good discussion of this case with Allard and Bill Buckley on Buckley's program. And they, you know, Buckley seems to go along with Allard's understanding of the case. And they're talking about, you know, going at this very objectively and understanding that, you know, mistakes could have been made, and, you know, and but didn't get into any kind of discussion that the LAPD and the district attorney fixed this case, Sirhan. So I go back to that because I've had recent discussions with Tommy Lowenstein, Allard's son, who's now writing a book on a case that he did with the Innocence Project. He's a lawyer, and he and the head of the Loyola Law School here in Los Angeles, Lori Levinson, won this case together. And so here's this guy who's really into this investigation. And I knew Tommy as a kid because the Lowenstein family lived across the street from us in Jerry Brown's house when Allard was helping Jerry Brown run for president. So we had this long-term relationship with Allard until he got shot in 1980 and died. And now with Tommy Lowenstein, so I'm saying it's going to take two Lowenstein generations to solve this case. So the Lowenstein name is coming back into this.
And just briefly, I think a fellow, not researcher, but friend, anyway, what would you call him, shot Mr. Lowenstein?
Well, he was a student, and the story that we got was that he was getting information through some electronic thing in his teeth, and his father was telling to go shoot, Allard Lowenstein. I don't know that's the case, but this guy was obviously emotionally disturbed when he did this because he was a student.
And hearing things.
Yeah, and he was a student of Allard Lowenstein at Stanford.
Strange circumstances, but we'll leave that
really.
for another show. So
and Allard had a young guy who was working on his master's and was going for a PhD. He came out and worked full time on the case as sort of a protege of Allard's. We also lost him. Let's see, what was his first name? His last name was Stone. Bad memory there. Anyway, this guy working for Allard became so upset in 1990 that he was losing his ability to go back into an academic mode and thought he was wasting his time on this case, actually committed suicide here in a park in Los Angeles. Greg Stone is his name, a wonderful man, and we loved him because he was doing the best investigation on the case, and we still have his files. They're over at the University of Southern California in the library there. So we lost two guys in this whole process and this whole effort to do something about this case, and losing Greg and Allard. Really, such tragedy after losing Robert Kennedy, too. Anyway, it's been a very interesting period of my life.
Yeah. Now, the article goes on to highlight some of the inconsistencies with the bullets, for one. But what caught my attention was the keys to a car that Saran had. And upon investigation, they really couldn't determine whose car it was. Can you discuss this a bit?
Well, actually, the keys that Saran, that were taken by the police, they went around checking cars to see if they could locate Saran's car, because he had driven to the Ambassador Hotel. And what they found was the key actually fit the lock, the car lock of another one. And the person that who owned, they finally found Sirhan's car about a block and a half away from the hotel, and were able to take it. But the guy that owned the car was one of the top people in the kitchen at the Ambassador, who was on a list, the FBI, the president's list, as somebody who should not be in the area where the president might be. So he was on a very select list. But he was investigated and found have nothing to do with this case at all, although he was there that night when Robert Kennedy was shot. So that's part of the mystery. One of the things I've been avoiding now in my new investigation of the case is to go into conspiracy theories, to talk about some of these mysteries that are out there, to name a suspect, to talk about the security guard who was right behind Robert Kennedy, because what you have to do at that point is prove those things. My proof is that they actually fixed and framed Sirhan with evidence that doesn't stand up. And just going into the prosecution's own evidence, which is left of it, although we've lost so much of it, but there is no evidence there now to prove that Sirhan could not and did not shoot Robert Kennedy, and there was a second gunman. Now, we have no suspects at this point, and we don't go there. We don't talk conspiracy, suspects, and so forth. I'm only talking about evidence that the prosecution has that we have found in the files. And with that, I can make the case that Sirhan couldn't have done it, and there was a second gunman. And so I call myself citizen prosecutor, and I'm prosecuting the prosecution. And that'll be the way I present the evidence.
Just briefly getting back to the other part was, you know, reading the article, I know but the thing about the keys. But the first thing that I thought of was, I thought, well, if Sirhan's got keys for this other guy's car, his keys must fit Sirhan's car. And that's what I was thinking. I thought, well, geez, I wonder, is there anything to this, you know?
Possible. I never saw that in the record that they...
No, but you know what I'm saying. If Sirhan's own car fit another guy's key, that other guy's key could have fit Sirhan's car, you know, and he's on a select enemies list, right? You know, not allowed within, you know, whatever it is, 200 feet of the president, or, you know,
yeah.
It just, and then a presidential candidate is shot and killed, and just, you know, food for thought.
One of those mysteries you find, both JFK case and the Robert Kennedy case. But to go there and to raise that as a new issue, or raise that as an issue, means you've got to prove it. What my job is to prove what is there in the record, which does prove that Sirhan couldn't and didn't do it, and there was a second gunman. In fact, they're still saying, well, with all those people, cameras, recording devices and everything else in the pantry, nobody saw anybody, saw the second gunman. But that's also true of Sirhan. They could never come up with one witness to put Sirhan in a position and his gun in a position to shoot Robert Kennedy four times in the back.
Oh, I know, and most people say he was 6 to 8 feet in front of him, you know, not that. I mean, it was just, you know, I saw one show where an L.A. detective was claiming that there was no way this guy, Scott Enyart, was making the whole story up, and he wasn't even there. And only later did somebody actually see a photo of him in there. So when he says he was taking pictures, and he should have, like, 18 to 20 pictures of click, 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 you know, at the time of the shooting, those were taken in by LAPD. Now, if they're destroyed for good or just, you know, being sat
here,
on.
Here again, you know, I testified at Enyart's case when he was trying to get some sort of consideration for their losing his and taking his pictures and not giving them back. But again, it's another blind alley. You know, what can you prove in terms of who shot Robert Kennedy with that information? And so it's one of those things, I just say to Scott, at this point, yes, you probably did get some pictures. Yes, they took your film. Yes, you may have gotten evidence from those photographs, but we don't know that. And so you can't go into these blind alleys, because what the prosecution will say now, what the DA and the police chief will say now, you know, give me a break. So, tell me what the evidence was. We don't have Scott Enyart's evidence, so we got to ignore it at this point.
Right. I think it's worth just discussing it, though, with, you know,
it's not
tonight.
Worth discussing at this point, because there's so much on the record worthy of discussion in terms of who shot Robert Kennedy and that Sirhan did not. That's got to be the focus.
Okay, you know, fair enough, but...
Otherwise, you're into documentaries, you're into books, and so forth. I've got books about the Robert Kennedy, lots of good information, but never getting to the point of who did it and how the evidence was destroyed and covered up. All that's in the books, but it never goes to the point of saying the prosecution had evidence of Sirhan not doing it and there was a second gunman doing it. Those are the key issues, and you get away from those key issues, and they got you blindsided at that point. And I'm not willing to go there anymore.
Oh, fair enough.
What's happening, because the 50th anniversary is coming up next year, June 5, of Kennedy assassination or the shooting of Robert Kennedy. That's coming up. So I've been involved in right now 6 documentaries, either advising. And I've been interviewed for 4 of them already. One of them's got 4 segments on one of the major networks already sold, but it's not going to be released until next year. So I'm working that way. I'm available to any of them. One of them wanted to sign me up on a contract. Well, I'm not doing this for money, for one thing. And I think the information I have ought to be for everybody and not just one particular television group. So we got these documentaries going. A couple of new books are being written. You know, Shane O'Sullivan's doing another documentary. He's already done a really good one. Tim Tate in London, another guy in London like Shane O'Sullivan, is doing another book, and he did a documentary years ago. So there's a woman living on the Gaza Strip who's a Jordanian. She's been, was here, spent a couple of days with me. She's doing a film for Jordan, the home country of the Sirhan family. And so all these things are happening, and I'm making myself available to any one of them to get this story out. Because at 92, I've got to make my time worthwhile. And that's why I keep emphasizing to you, don't get into these side issues, because they're interesting. And they should be solved, but you can't solve them. You can't solve, the question of suspects at this point. Can't solve the Scott Enyart thing. You can't solve a lot of these things. All you can do is talk about them and write about them and do documentaries about them. My job is to say, go back to the police chief and the DA and the police commission and the board of supervisors, LA City Council, and just say, look, these are the facts in this case. The current administration, the police department, and the district attorney that have a legal and moral right to do a new investigation based upon the fact that Sirhan was not the culprit, not the shooter.
Right, and you gave a statement to that effect at the parole board.
Right.
Yet they won't give him parole. I mean, he said he would just go back to Jordan, right? So he wouldn't be a problem here, even if he was released.
Right, but they wouldn't give him that opportunity.
Yeah. So that's vindictive.
Well, yeah, and there's an assistant, retired assistant district attorney who was there, talking about the prosecution's case against Sirhan. And I sat beside him. I turned to him a couple of times. Why don't you go back to your own files and deal with the questions of fact that he was innocent of this? And I was so angry at that I've never been that angry before, emotional before, in doing anything in my life. And because he was a real victim at this point, even though he did shoot 5 people. One, it's also possible, like his attorneys are now saying, and his attorneys have said since 1969, that he was programmed, that he was hypnotized or self-hypnotized. The court has rejected that. So again, I appreciate what they're trying to do, and they're probably right about that. But you can't prove it, and the court's not taking it on. That's why I say go back to the actual facts of the case and the fact that the prosecution fixed this case against Sirhan. And there's positive proof of that.
Yeah, but they don't even want to entertain that thought, I guess. That's what you're up against.
They won't meet with us. You know, I'm starting up my letter to the Chief Beck, and my draft, and to District Attorney Lacey. She succeeded Cooley, who we tried to meet with her, but they won't meet with us. They won't even answer my letters. At one point, I tried to track down the letter last year sometime, and I was able to talk to a deputy district attorney because I was trying to track down who got that letter, because Lacey's secretary said she never saw it. And so I finally found out that the mailroom decides where those letters go, because there's 1,000 people on that in that department. And it went to a certain deputy district attorney who's now number 3 guy in that office. And I had a chance to talk with him. Now, I never made any progress with him, but when I told him we had 2 lawyers from Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, which is a very conservative law firm, he was amazed that we had that kind of talent working on this case. They've dropped out at this point because they can see no real end to this for now. So that's the problem with every district attorney we've tried to meet with. We try to meet with the grand jury at one point, and they just close the door on it. Now, the fact that I'm sure about is they know as much as we do about this case. And Sirhan was not guilty. There was a second gunman who was guilty, and they're not willing to go there. So they don't answer my letters. They don't answer any of our lawyers. And so... We're just waiting to find out something else will work, and I believe it will.
Right. Well, I applaud optimism. I mean, that's why, you know, I'm just trying to keep it in the public eye, and you're trying to have a more legal tack than I am. I'm just looking at it from an interest. Like, I'm interested in what we think happened, and whether we can prove it, like you say, is another story. But, you know, I'm confident that Scott Enyart was in there and taking pictures. Now, what he got on film, that's up for debate, discussion. But, I mean, he was there. And, you know full well, and I think listeners know the hassle, the 20-year effort just to get his, Now, let me just ask you about a couple of researchers that you may have come across. Ted Chirac. He did a lot of work on his documentary. It was called The Second Gun.
Yeah.
What did you think of his research and what he found out?
And his documentary on it is powerful and correct. He did a lot of really great research early, 1970, 71, 72. And I worked with him and spent time with him, went to his memorial. He died a couple of years ago. And got to know a couple of his nephews. He did really great work, some of the best work that was done. And fortunately, it's online, easily downloaded as the call of the second gunman, right?
Now, Lynn Mangan. Do you know Lynn Mangan well?
Yeah, worked with her a long time ago. We used to fight like hell.
Okay.
We are now the best of buddies because I picked up on her work, because she's got really good stuff on her website. She's not getting the credit that she deserves with all the work she's done and all the evidence she should put together. So we spend a lot of time either on the phone or emailing back and forth, because I'm picking up some of the best stuff that's there that gives us a chance to go after the prosecution.
And now William Pepper, who is handling the case right now, what's your thought of right now? I mean, they're almost exhausting all the avenues to do anything.
Exhausted.
Exhausted. Right.
They have exhausted every court possibility. Even the Ninth Circuit, one of the most liberal appeal courts in the country, turned them down. But the Attorney General did a terrible job. She's now our senator. I didn't vote for her.
Who's that?
You tell me. I forgot her name.
Okay.
Her name is, I got an article right in front of me. let's see. Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris is her name. She's now our U.S. Senator. But she carried, peddled the same nonsense about the case that the prosecution carried for so many years. And so she appealed, she fought Pepper and Dusek. Lori Dusek is the person who's been doing most of the work for Pepper on this case. Two great lawyers did great work, but they're finished. They went final appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court with no result. They're now going to, I think it's an OAS, South American appeal process, and they're going there to see if they can get anything done. I just told them recently I'd like to work with them and with Tommy Lowenstein and do a innocence project for Sirhan. The district attorney here now has an innocent project within the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office, and that's available to us, and I think Lori Dusek is going to agree to do that, and I hope enlist then Tommy Lowenstein as well, Al's son.
Right. Now, other than that, what do you recall from this interview with Mr. Lowenstein? This was, like I said, you know, back in the day, 1973, and it's just, I mean, you guys seem quite sure that something was rotten with the case. And it's going to be taking 50 years just to get the public to talk about it. I mean,
There's been a lot of talk about it, a lot of good books about it, and a lot of good television about it. But again, you get into these blind alleys, and you can't convince the series of prosecutors, the DAs and the LAPD, the prosecutors, the district attorneys and the police chiefs about anything, because you get into these side alleys probably good ideas, but not provable. And so we've been in the position of not being able to prove against what they say, you're just a bunch of conspiracy theorists. And that's their defense, knowing full well that Sirhan couldn't and didn't do it. There was a second gunman. See, they don't have to respond to the books and the television and to the lawyers on this case. They just say, they just fend you off. And that's been our experience. And I'm through with that. At 92, I've got to finally get to the truth in this and put it out there. And that's what I'm doing.
Well, I commend you again for your effort. And, you know, you're speaking at the parole board, I think, was, inspirational for other people that said, we're not going to let this drop. And it's just a shame that you couldn't shame some of these guys into taking a second look. Like you say, whether you don't have to prove who was doing everything, but you can prove that Sirhan didn't do all the shooting. I mean, just count the bullets, count, take a look at them from the actual evidence of all the different wounds.
Yeah, well, see, here the bullet count, we also have this new scientific evidence developed by Philip Van Praagh. Actually, the guy who gets credit for this is Brad Johnson, because he found in the California State Archives, I think over 200, 300 audio tapes, although there are many more that were collected and destroyed by the LAPD and the district attorney. But this one audio tape had on its box maybe gunshots. There's a couple little blips on that. Well, the audio tape was made by a Polish journalist who was working for a Canadian newspaper during this campaign, was writing a book on presidential elections, and his name is Brzezinski, Stanislaw Brzezinski. Well, his audio tape that night was in very bad shape. It had been spliced, re-spliced by the FBI, which picked it up from the Royal Canadian Police early 1969. And they tested it and couldn't find a lot of information on it. Well, Brad Johnson, who just retired from CNN after 30 years, got that tape in the hands of different technology people. And the best one was Philip Van Praagh, who was able to find 13 shots on an audio tape, two shots to begin with, and then a pause of about 2 seconds, and then a flurry of shots.
Couple on top of each other where there wasn't time to fire from one gun.
Right, right. They did a gun test that way, and they were so close together, it had to be a second gun. So that information is there, but the FBI, we took that tape again. I got this done by the U.S. attorney here, and we sent all of that information to the FBI Quantico lab, and they did a retesting, and they came back with a report. They couldn't even find 8 shots. Then we found out that the Washington Post and some scientific organizations had been really complaining and exposing the really bad forensics out of that lab and other FBI labs around the country, that they really were screwing up and keeping people in jail when they shouldn't be. So here we wind up with another problem where the FBI can't really do its work and screwed up
or can't
again.
Be trusted. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that audio tape is there, and it does. And I talked to Philip Van Praagh recently. He's moved from Arizona to New Mexico. And he's had over 50 years doing this kind of work and had his own lab. And so you can't dispute him on the science. What they do dispute him on is, well, you can't prove it, the physical evidence. Well, this is one of the things that I've been able to do to understand the case more and in a better way over the last few years. That we can actually show, two shots by Sirhan shooting at Kennedy, not hitting him, the gun 3 feet, 2 to 3 feet in front of Kennedy, not the body of Sirhan, but his gun, so no contact wounds at all, but he missed Kennedy, shot me, okay? 2 shots. When he was buried, and this is why he couldn't have shot Robert Kennedy, he was pushed up against the steam table, face down, And people, about 10 guys jumped him at that point.
Carl Uecker grabbed his arm right away, right?
Carl Uecker grabbed him around the neck first, grabbed his gun hand with his own left hand, pounded it on the steam table. Sirhan kept firing away from Kennedy, who was behind Sirhan at this point, and behind Uecker, bending over the steam table. He gets off 6 more shots. He shoots 4 other people, Ira Goldstein once, and one through his pant leg, and also Elizabeth Evans and William Wiesel and Erwin Stroll. That's 2 shots. He's captured, fires 6 shots, shoots 4 other people with 5 shots, 2 of them wild, one that went through his pants, and one that was left, the 8th one that was fired last, I guess, and a couple of the wild ones going into the door frames. But here so where are the 4 shots at the back of Kennedy if he's fired all these 8 shots and never at Robert Kennedy and accounted for? We've never done that count before that way. Now, the best guys working on this guy was Dr. Robert Joling, who's, he and Van Praagh did a really, you know, a really great document, a 500-page document on the facts of this case. They kept saying, well, we can prove 9 shots. But never began saying, well, how can we prove 12 shots or 13 shots? Well, that's the way to do it, by counting the bullets that hit other victims. You know,
Thomas Noguchi pointed out that there were powder burns, and on these powder burns, the gun had to be within an inch or two.
No, contact wound within an inch.
Okay, within an inch, right? You know.
His testimony at the trial was a contact or a half to 1 inch from his head and his back.
Right, but I guess the point I was trying to make, but not feet away. These are powder burns.
Yeah. Well, not only powder burns, but Sirhan was never in that position behind him, and his gun was never behind Robert Kennedy. The gun was always in front of Robert Kennedy. And one other piece of evidence that became evidence, just because I stare at some of the pictures, is one by Bill Eppridge of Lifetime, who was there that night. And he did a great article, you know, good pictures in a special Kennedy issued Life magazine, where he actually prints the film of the case. So you've got the series right from the beginning when his first shot is at me on the floor, and then through that very short period of time. Well, that picture, there's one picture there of Kennedy lying on the floor, and I'm lying on the floor right behind him. My feet are about 3 feet from his head. He gets shot in the back of the head with a shot flying eastward from the second gunman. I get shot in the front of my head, and I'm lying on my back, from a shot going westward. So here's two guys on the floor, one with an eastward shot and one with a westward shot. There's got to be two second gunmen. You know, Sirhan with no Annie Oakley hitting Kennedy and then turning quickly and shooting me, or shooting me first and then shooting Kennedy. These things are discoverable, and it takes a lot of attention. The disadvantage I have is that my wife is now in a nursing home and can't come out, which leaves me at home alone. It's very depressing to know that, because I visit her a couple of times a week. But it gives me an opportunity to deal with my depression and work on this case full time. And so I sit with it, I look at things, I go over the evidence, go over the books, go over the files of the LAPD, go over the transcript of the grand jury, the trial, and that's the way you can build a case, piece by piece by piece. And even though a guy like Phil Melanson and his guy, Bill Traber, something like that, did a really great book and get into all these issues, it's not with the kind of, you know, making the case against the prosecution, you know, point by point, and that's what I'm doing.
All right, well, I wish you the best of luck, and maybe you get a lucky break somehow. I mean, like you mentioned, Laurie Dusick and Bill Pepper have exhausted their effort, but still people follow it, and it will be the 50th anniversary coming up, as you mentioned. So, to wrap up then, is there anything that I didn't get to that you would like listeners to know about, that just anything I didn't bring up that you feel important?
No, I gave you most of my good stuff, and I also thank Jim DiEugenio for getting to you and also working with you, because we're working together, and we actually were able to sabotage a documentary that was being done attacking John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy for the whole Cuban issue. And we were actually worked with the documentary filmmaker and also with some pretty important people in Hollywood. And Jim did a really great job in preparing us for that. And now he's working on the Robert Kennedy case again.
Right. Well, you're doing the good fight. So thank you for your good work. It's been a pleasure to speak to you. And email me if anything pops up in the near future that you want to publicize. I'll be glad to help the effort in any way I can.
Well, thank you for your good work, and glad to be getting your help on this one.
Okay. All right. Good night.
Thank you.
Okay.
Black Op Radio is pleased to announce a direct download section. That's right. Now you can purchase all archive shows and specialty packages such as the John Armstrong interview, Doug Horn, Jim Douglas, Jim DiGenio, and more. So instead of having to wait with regular mail, you can get shows you want in minutes directly to your computer. Check out the direct download section at blackopradio.com.
Black Op Radio presents Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, the DVD Complete Collection. Finally, the DVD set you've been waiting for is available. Over 15 hours with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty. Over 15 hours.
Over 15 hours.
Over 15 hours. Interviews with Len Osanek, John Judge, David Ratcliffe, and more. This is a one-of-a-kind set. These interviews feature Fletcher Prouty having candid conversations regarding his 23 years in the military, but specifically 9 years in the Pentagon from 1955 to 1964. His inside knowledge is invaluable to researchers of this era of American and world history. These are the revelations you've been waiting for. Over 15 hours with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, the complete DVD collection. Available at the Colonel Prouty reference site, www.prouty.org, and blackopradio.com.
It's a political rally, a free speech zone, a town hall meeting.
It's an interrogation at NSA headquarters. Now, it's time to make a statement. Time to represent. Time to let them know who you are. That you're part of the Black Op. With a brand new Black Op Radio t-shirt. Comes in all sizes. Wear it loud and proud. Join the Black Op today. www.blackopradio.com.
If you believe there's more to the JFK assassination and the mystery surrounding the CIA and its covert operations, you're not alone. Meet the man Oliver Stone called X in the epic motion picture JFK. Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty comes forward with never before seen or heard documentation and information about JFK, the Vietnam War, the CIA, and more on a brand new CD-ROM. The collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty is an incredible offer not to be missed. For a limited time only, find the answers surrounding these issues and more with the collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty. Or visit the Colonel Prouty reference site on the World Wide Web, the collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty.